Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 387. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about rugged mountains, friendly shopkeepers, and heaps of history as we go to Macedonia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have two news stories for you, plus a bonus. It was just Friday the 13th, and people were flying, even though some people might be too afraid to fly on a superstitious holiday like that. Probably the people who were the least superstitious were those who boarded Flight 666 to hell on Friday, and that is HEL, which is the call sign for Helsinki. There's an interview in the UK's Guardian about the pilot of that flight. In the second news story, it's quite common and often recommended that people have an open-door policy at work. That doesn't work as well when you're airline pilot. A Southwest flight took off with one of the doors open. It was a baggage door, and after they took off, an alarm went off. I'm going to suggest they change that alarm to work while the plane is still on the ground. And the third news story, the bonus news story, is if you go to amateurtraveler.com, you can see what I've been doing recently. I traveled to Virginia City, Nevada, where I took place in the 54th annual International Camel Races. I did, in fact, ride a camel. There are pictures of that, and there's also a video that I took of the event of a camel race, an ostrich race, and a zebra race. You can check that out along with links to the other two stories at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Kelsey, who's coming to us from cinetraveler.com. That's cine like cinema, C-I-N-E. Kelsey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Kelsey has come to talk to us about, and I'm going to say this the way you expect it, and then I'm going to say it right, Macedonia or Macedonia.
Correct.
And you went to Macedonia when?
Just a month ago.
Before we talk about Macedonia, just for those people who don't know their Greek history, can you put it on a map for us?
Yes, it is north of Greece. One side is Albania. And if you don't know where Albania is, it's across the water from Italy.
Okay. And the home, I think most people who are fans of history or students of history know it for, is Alexander the Great coming from Macedonia. I suspect they still proudly claim him.
I wouldn't say proudly.
Okay.
They roll their eyes and say, ah, Alexander the Great. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
It was, in fact, a long time ago. Roughly 2,300 years.
Yeah.
So what itinerary would you recommend for Macedonia?
Well, we actually drove coming from Albania. And our first stop was in Ohrid, or as they say, Ohrid. They like put that enunciation on the H. And that's their place to go for vacation. All the Macedonians go there. Then we went to Bitola, which is about an hour away from Ohrid, which is the second largest city in Macedonia. And then we went up into the mountains, which most of Macedonia is mountains, but there's a lot of, you know, valleys that you can cut through in driving.
And I was going to say, we're entirely landlocked here in Macedonia.
Yeah, except for when you go into Ohrid, where it borders on Albania, there's a lake. It's Lake Ohrid, even though it's not the ocean, but it is a landlocked country in that sense.
Okay.
So from Bitola, we went up to Kruševo, which is in the top of the mountains. And then we cut all the way across to the southeastern corner to Strumica, and we went down to Bansko, which is a little tiny nothing of a town there. Then we went up to the northeastern part into Krotovo and Kuklia, and then we cut back over to Skopje. And then while we were in Skopje, we went to Mount Vodno and Lake Matka.
We covered rather a lot of Macedonia.
Yes, we went all over and tried to see as much as we could see, but we realized it's the little gemstone, that's the gift that keeps giving year after year.
Now, how long were you there?
A week.
Okay. I was going to say, it's not a big country, so you covered pretty much the whole country as you were describing all those places, but that's just a week's itinerary.
Yes, and it's so funny because all the Macedonians will say, we have such a small country, you can drive around the whole country in a day. But it would probably take 24 hours to do it.
Now let's go back and do that in a little slower and in a little more detail. So you drove over from Albania, you say you started in...
Ohrid, yes. It's both the town and the lake are UNESCO. World Heritage Sites. And we're in an Albanian car. And we're just listening to the GPS, and we had put in the coordinates of where we're staying. And all of a sudden, this man, like, waves his hands and flags us down. He rolls down the window, and he starts to speak to us in Albanian. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't know Albanian. And he said, oh, you speak English. He said, are you lost? And we said, well, we're trying to find where we were going to stay. And he said, well, where is it? And I handed him the piece of paper with the address and the phone number. And he looks at it. He gets his phone out, and he calls the person, and he talks to him. And we think, okay. And he said, okay, follow me. So we turn the car around, and we start following this man. And he doesn't know where the place is that we need to go. So he keeps stopping his car, rolling down the window, and asking the people in the street, hey, do you know where this place is? And they would point, and then he'd drive a few blocks, and then they'd roll down the window, and he said, hey, I need to find this Marino Apartments place. He's like, do you know where that is? And somebody point and do that. And so he'd drive a few more blocks, and it went on until finally we pulled up, and the woman he had called was standing outside the apartments, and he's like, he's talking to her. He's like, is this the place and everything? And I'm like, yes, yes, that's the place. And he's like, okay. And he just waves and leaves. And so that was our first encounter with somebody from Macedonia. Just randomly sees us, bends over backwards to help us, and then just goes, bye.
Excellent.
And the lake, it's kind of interesting because it's one of the oldest lakes in the world. And they think it's between 3 and 5 million years old. And they think it also might be the most diverse lake for its size in the world.
Okay, in terms of the different types of fish and such.
Yeah, and it's a very deep lake. It's a great place for people to go dive. I think it's 300 meters deep. And the water is just crystal clear.
What else stands out for you from Ohrid?
Well, the great thing about Ohrid,
it's a vacation town.
Yeah, it's got a really great, like, the old town. I don't know how to describe it. It's a walled city, and there's a fort. There's a Roman theater and churches and a fortress. And then there's this place called Saint, I don't know how you say it, Kilimint at Plasnik. It's a church, and it's newly built, but there's this history behind the church. The church was beautiful. It's only built in 2002, but I guess it used to be a site for a mosque before that. And there's all these excavations of mosaics in that same area.
Okay. And what was the name of the saint again?
It's Kllimint. But if you're a Roman ruins person, the theater is really interesting, and they still use it, actually. It's a working theater.
Okay. And then it looks like the fortress is from much later. It looks like 1400s or 1300s from that period of time, roughly.
You're the history person. I'm not. I'm the art historian. I'm not the history.
Okay.
But it's a really cute town. And the thing that we did, and we were kind of surprised because the signs, even though everything is in Cyrillic, in this particular town, they're also in English. And there's pretty good signage to get to this little town area, the old town area, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing that we did in this town is that most of the places, you don't have to, like the Roman theater, obviously, you're not going to have to pay an admission to go in. It's not out inside. So what we did is we got up really early when the sun came up, and we toured the entire town without seeing anybody but a local here and then.
Excellent. Anything else you would recommend to do or see or eat or drink as far as that goes before we move on?
This is like the capital for where all the artisans are. They, I know they have bought some really great jewelry there. And all the handmade things are usually in Oran.
Okay. And what sort of handmade art and craft are we talking about?
They have lots of silver and different kinds of coral that they make jewelry out of. And it's interesting because they actually will weigh it to give you a price on it. Instead of saying those earrings are X amount of money, she weighs it and then figures out, okay, this is how much it is.
Interesting. And then from there you went to?
Right there in the Ord area is the national park. It's Galicica.
Okay.
And it is a really amazing park. There's all different hikes you can take. You can drive along the coast of Lake Ored, and you can go drive up and up and up and up into the mountains and then get to a place where you can hike all the way to the top of the mountains. And when you get to the top of the mountains, you can look out, and on one side is Lake Ored, and you can see Albania. And on the other side is the other lake, and you can see, if it's a clear day, you can see Greece. And there's tons of different kinds of hiking in the national park. You can go take a picnic in one area. And all along the coast of the lake, there's all little coastal towns where you can stop and do different things.
Excellent. Where next?
Well, then we went to Bitola, which is a town about an hour away from Ored. And it's the second largest town in Macedonia. And it's kind of interesting because the terrain changes, and it's got all like 18th and 19th century architecture in the city. It's very cute, very quaint. And this part, including Ored, is much cooler than the Skopje area of Macedonia. So in the summer, everyone likes to come to this area because it's a lot cooler. They've got an Ottoman bazaar and an old town. And like most places in Macedonia, everything has, there's mosques, there's churches, there's Orthodox churches. It's very diverse.
Okay.
But the really cool thing, there was a church in Bitola that I went in, and I kind of have a rule for myself. If I'm in what I call a working church, and it's not a touristy church, it's a church where people are constantly going in and out and we're worshiping.
Mm-hmm.
We went to this particular church, and I don't take pictures in what I call a working church, but it was probably one of the most beautiful churches on the inside because of the paintings. Mm-hmm. And I later found out it's mainly blue. So I heard that if a church on the inside is mainly blue in this area, it means it's something about the Mother Mary is what the focus is of this church. But people were really kind. They didn't speak English to us, but they were just like, go in, go in, go in. And we looked around in this church. It was really gorgeous on the inside. So I would highly recommend going to this church. And its name was Church St. Maria.
Okay.
And just like Ored, I was surprised because Bitola has really good signage. And it's in English as well. So you can just look for Church St. Maria, the sign, and just find it. But it was a really cool church. But the main reason why we went to Bitola is because the person that I travel with is obsessed with Roman history.
Okay. I know someone like that.
Yes, I do. I figured that you would be understanding because I'd read about this and I couldn't keep it from him. Is just on the outskirts of Bitola is this place called Herculaea. And it is a Roman town that's been uncovered, and it has amphitheaters and baths and basilicas and mosaics. And the amphitheater has been restored, but a big chunk of it is original. But the coolest thing about this amphitheater is I went all the way to the top of the amphitheater and he went all the way to the bottom and he started whispering and I could hear him as if he was standing right beside me. The acoustics were amazing. And the man that kind of was the historian there that took your money to come in to see this area, he was very friendly and He said, any questions you have, come and ask me afterwards. And the mosaics that are preserved there, the color, I mean, it looks like they had just painted them. They're gorgeously bright, and they're not covered from the sun. Mm-hmm. The mosaics have not been restored. They're as they found them. And so afterwards, when we were leaving, we had some questions, and I think we ended up speaking to this man for an hour. And he just kept telling us more and more and more and more about this area. And come to find out, it's this massive place, that the city that's been uncovered, but it's only 12% uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still actively working to uncover it. But it's this massive area. And I kept thinking, okay, maybe I read that in an old guidebook, or maybe my information is incorrect. And it said 12% uncovered, and then it listed everything that we saw as being part of what's uncovered. So every time you go there, I guess there should be something new that's uncovered. But if you are a Roman history buff, it's Disneyland. But but it's really interesting, because the Macedonian people, especially even the man that's there, they're very quick to say, we are not of Roman descent. We are more Greek descent. They're very clear about that.
Okay. And you had said something about freshly painted, but I think one of the reasons that it doesn't fade as much is that it doesn't tend to be painted at all, but they're using different color stones and tile.
Yes. I mean, like the paint, it almost looks like the paint had just been painted, that kind of like.
Right, right.
Fresh.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've seen some mosaics in Turkey and different places, and they're mm-hmm. much more subdued and not as bright, but the greens, I was just amazed at how bright the greens were.
Interesting.
I was surprised at how intact they were, and the different designs. It was just kind of interesting. Even if that kind of stuff does not interest a person, I'm not necessarily like a Roman ruins person, but I found the place very interesting, and especially that amphitheater with the acoustics. And you can climb all the way to the top, and then you can have this great view of the entire uncovered city and all around. It's a really cool place.
Excellent. And where did you go next?
Next, we went to Kruševo, and it's like a ski resort area in the mountains. And the reason why I wanted to go is because I heard they had this monument to a singer there, and I'd seen pictures of it. And I thought, wow, it's really space-agey looking, and I definitely want to go there. Well, we go to the monument, which I think is for the singer. And it turns out it is a war monument. It's for the, I don't know how you say it, ILINDEN. It's the Uprising Monument. And in it contains the tomb of Nikola Karaev. I don't know how you say his last name. And it was presented on the 2nd of August, 1974. And it's this kind of space age. It looks like something from Epcot Center. And it has all this stained glass, and it's a very strange thing, because I kept telling my spouse, he's like, we're driving up into this, because it gets really steep in the mountains, and it's very windy to get up there. And he said, where are we going? Where are you taking me? And I said, I promise, all the pictures I've seen of this monument, it just looks like it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's out in this field. And sure enough, we get up there, and it does. It looks like it's out in this field. So we go into the monument, and look around, and it's really kind of gorgeous. And before I knew it was from 1974, I was like, it looks like something from the 70s, and it definitely has that dated look to it. But it's definitely an interesting thing to look at. So I had my information all wrong, thinking that this is a monument to the singer. And so we had parked in this parking lot, and across the way there was a museum. And I said, well, let's see what this museum is. Well, sure enough, the museum was the museum for the singer. And so I said, do you want to go in there? And he's like, okay, while we're here. Oh my gosh, this is probably one of the strangest things I've done in my life, is go in this museum dedicated to the singer. And his name was Toshe Proeski. And he was considered to be the most famous singer ever from Macedonia and the Balkans. And he was an ambassador for UNICEF by age 26. And the thing is about the singer is that he died when he was 27. He died in a car crash in Croatia. So they erected this museum to the singer. And so we go in the museum, and I mean, you can't take a camera in there. It's the high security. And we get our tickets. And we walk in, and there's this woman that comes up that's obviously from the museum, and she starts speaking to us in Macedonian. And I said, I'm so sorry, I don't know Macedonian. And so she switches directly into English, and she gives us this personalized tour of this museum. We are the only people in the museum, much like most of the places we've been in Macedonia, like in the war memorial. We're the only people there. We're the only people in there. There are security cameras everywhere. I kept thinking everything was made of gold. And she gives us this tour of the museum about this singer. I learned more things about this guy. I mean, they've taken his living room set from where he lived. It's there. They've got his dental floss there. It makes anything for Elvis look tame.
Well, I read that they called him the Elvis Presley of the Balkans, so I think you're on the right track there.
Yes, and they had a contest to build the museum, like design the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a beautiful, beautifully designed museum. And I guess he was very religious. And the winning design, if you go outside and you can kind of look at the building from the side and see it, it's in the shape of a cross. And it's just gorgeous. There's all this windows and lighting, and there's a room where you can go listen to all this music. And much like a lot of people that when they die young, they've released albums after his death, and he had worked on an English language album before he died. And so they actually have an English language album there you can listen to and you can buy. They have a complete gift shop. But they have wax figures of him, and they were made in Ukraine, two wax figures there. But they're so proud of him. And it was just so cool to be in there. And just this woman is just so enthusiastic and just, oh, he was so great. And so it was something that I wasn't expecting. And I just thought, oh, we'll go in this museum and see a jacket and a record. And it's everything but the kitchen. I think his kitchen sink might be in there because they have pretty much, I have his motorcycles, everything.
Okay. Well, we're going to need to pick up the pace a little more if we're going to cover all the other places you've gone to here.
Okay.
The one thing I wanted to say before we leave there is the uprising that we were talking about was an uprising, an unsuccessful one against the Ottoman Empire. So back in the early 1900s. Okay. And where do we go from there?
Well, then we drove to the eastern side, the southeastern corner of Macedonia. And that area, if you're a wine person, it's a really great wine country. I guess there's a wine person there that signs all his bottles and he ships them to a restaurant in New York. And I guess you can buy them at that wine place, like €20. And I guess in New York, they sell them for like €200. Mm. So if you're into wine, it's a great area. I'm not a wine person. But we went to Strumica. And that's a good base if you're wanting to explore this part of Macedonia. And it's got churches and sculptures. And there's some really great hiking paths if you walk up through the old part of town and get up to the top. There's traditional hiking paths, and it's cute because they have these little signs and they show you. You can do jumping jacks and different exercises, all the hiking. And then you can look down and see the entire town. And one thing I forgot to mention about Macedonia, if you wondered where all the Yugos went, they're in Macedonia. There are Yugos everywhere. And if you wondered where all the like working trucks from the 1940s or 50s went, they're in Macedonia.
Hmm.
So you'll see them everywhere. But the reason why we went to Strumica was a pilgrimage to a Roman site, which is a little town called Bonsko. And it's 12 kilometers southeast of Strumica. And Bonsko is the hot springs capital of Macedonia.
Mm.
Now, if you go to Bonsko, you may not really see a town or anything much. But the thing is, you've got to look for this very Soviet-looking hotel. And it looks like it's deserted and abandoned. But that Soviet hotel is the marker for you to find the ruins of a Roman bathhouse. And they've been restoring it. And it dates from the 3rd and 4th century AD. And there's 10 rooms. Most of them have vaulted ceilings. And it covers about 1,000 square meters. And several of the rooms are almost completely preserved.
Hmm.
And they're currently in renovations. But like I said, most things in Macedonia, we were the only people there. And the water coming out of the hot springs, I mean, it is beyond like boiling hot. It's, you can see, we were there probably, it was really in the 90s Fahrenheit, mm-hmm. and we could see the steam rising off the water. It was so hot.
Now, you mentioned now a few times that you were the only person there at a number of different places.
Yes.
Is that you found that there just isn't that much tourism to Macedonia, or you were there during, I would say, August, I would expect to be at the high season, except, of course, for the weather.
I'm just a little baffled at why no one has discovered Macedonia. People just don't know to go there.
And you found that they were ready to accept tourists from everything you've said so far.
Now, in Ohrid is a more touristy area for mm-hmm. the Macedonian people, and people come over from Albania or from Italy. But in Bitola, it's the second largest city. There's more people there. But we go out to these sites, like the even outside of Bitola, and maybe there were 5 other people there.
Hmm.
I mean, that's the thing I cannot understand about Macedonia. No one has really discovered it. So we kind of had the place to ourselves.
Hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. Going back to this Roman bathhouse, if you're into Roman ruins, since we were the only people there, we were free to explore, go in, look around. You can tell which pieces are new and which pieces are original, but it's interesting how much of it is original. Okay, next we went to Kratovo. And Kratovo is a town that's inside the belly of an ancient and burnt-out volcanic crater. And it's full of bridges and stone towers and clock towers. And the interesting thing about Kratovo is a mining town. Mm-hmm. So there's like a Jewish section, a Catholic section, a Muslim section, an Orthodox part of town. So you can go and just walk and it just changes. And it's really a fascinating place. But the really interesting part of when we went there was there's this place, it was called like this Rock Art Center, that was what it was called. And I really wanted to go there. I didn't exactly understand what it was, but I wanted to go there. So we went in there and I started looking around and they had a few things for sale and everything was handmade. And so I started picking out things. And the next thing I know, the woman has called in her husband and then the husband's called in the son who can speak English and they're making us tea and then they're serving us honey and bread and we're like, this is really nice. I said, they probably are doing this because we were buying things. And I was like, that's really nice. And then the father asked the son, he said, well, would you like us to show you around the town? We thought, okay, we'll do this for 30 minutes. Well, 5 hours later, we had to actually say, we have got to leave. But this is a great example of the way the people are in Macedonia. They don't have an agenda with time. So this man leisurely showed us around the town, took us to a church where there on the church, there was a Jewish symbol, a Christian symbol, and a Muslim symbol. And we would be walking and he would see people they would know and he would stop and introduce us. And there was a man there that looked just like Super Mario, except he had gray hair. I mean, he had on the exact same outfit Super Mario had. The man took us to his house. He kept giving us brandy. They're really proud of that. And so then we went to another place. We went to Super Mario's shop. And then he takes out a rag and it's really dirty in there. And he's kind of like wiping off this table. And he's like, hey, we should all drink some brandy. And that's the way it went for 5 hours. But if you want a really great tour of Kratovo, you should definitely go to the Rock Art Center and just say, hey, we'd love to have a tour. Just make sure you have a lot of time to spare. Because that's what we've learned in Macedonia is you start talking to people and then they don't have an agenda of time. They're with you and they just want to talk to you. And that contact is so important to them. And they're very proud of where they live and they want to show it off.
Excellent.
So that was a really interesting experience. But not far from Kratovo is the stone dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these natural rock formations, and it's near the village of Kuklia. And they're kind of strange looking. And once again, we were the only people there. There's a big sign, and the road going to the dolls is actually paved now. It didn't used to be paved.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the main piece of the stone dolls, it's supposed to be a wedding party. And it's supposed to be like the bride and the groom. And then the side of them is like the best man and the maid of honor. And if you look off kind of in the distance, you see this other figure. And the legend goes is that this man, he had a sweetheart in one village and a sweetheart in another village. And so he's marrying his sweetheart in this one village. And the other sweetheart discovers it, and she comes upon this wedding, and she gets so angry that she turns everybody into stone. So that's the legend of the stone dolls. If you really look at it, it looks like a woman holding the, like a bouquet. But it's such an interesting area, and then behind there's all sorts of different hiking you can go on. Mm-hmm. Most places in Macedonia, there's hiking. If you're a hiker, it's a great place to be.
Excellent. And they look to be, from the pictures you sent, to be hoodoos, to be naturally occurring stone spires.
Yes, they are naturally occurring. Nobody's carved them or done anything to them, yes. And it's pretty large. It covers over a kilometer, this area. So after that, we headed on to the capital, which is Skopje. And one of the important things to know about Skopje is the date of the 26th of July, 1963. And at some point, you'll see this date if you're in Skopje, or you'll hear someone talking about it. And it's the date of when the earthquake destroyed the city. And they have an old railway station, and it's set as a reminder of the event. And they've just left it how it's been destroyed on the side. And they've also left the clock, which is stopped at 5:17 a.m. And inside the old railway station is the city museum, but every time we went there it wasn't open, and then I read that it sometimes is open and sometimes isn't. The thing about Skopje, which is kind of interesting, if you're in like the kind of the main part of town for tourism, it's like Las Vegas on acid. It is. I never expected. I thought, oh, we're in Macedonia, and we get there and it's like, what happened?
So I get a mental image when you say that of bright lights, of neon. Is that what we're talking about?
No.
Okay.
Sculptures.
Sculptures.
Statues.
Oh, okay.
Fountains. Lighted bridges. It's crazy looking. I guess they have what they call Skopje 2014. Mm-hmm. And it's the beautification of the city center it's called non-revenue producing projects. So they have set aside in their budget money for non-revenue producing projects, which would be sculptures and fountains and different things. But the thing is that none of it makes sense. So there's this statue, and they call it Warrior, but everybody knows it's Alexander the Great, and he's on this massive horse. It's 22 meters high. It's very controversial because it's this huge fountain, and at night, it's crazy to see it at night because it lights up with all, it has a light show and music. But at the bottom where the fountain is are all these lions. And so all the Macedonian people are like, okay, one, we don't really have horses here. Have you seen big, massive horses? And two, we don't have lions. It makes absolutely no sense. And then you might walk a few steps and there might be this very modern art sculpture. And then it's kind of abstract. And then you walk a few steps and there'll be these sculptures of these two women in like a modern day dress. And they both have cell phones and shopping bags. And then they have replicas of things in the world. And so one of the people in Macedonia that ended up becoming our friend, they said, this is the way the Macedonians people think. Well, the people doing this project think. They go all over the world and they say, okay, we have this, we have that, we have that, we have, oh, we don't have that. Let me write that down. Okay, we don't have that. So then they come back with their list and they're like.
So replicas of what sort of things, for instance?
Arc de Triomphe.
Arc de Triomphe, okay.
Yeah. They were building something and it looked like the Roman Colosseum.
Okay.
Like the buildings all kind of look like replicas of other buildings in other countries. There's this bridge that has lights on it. It looks like it's in Paris.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you say like a replica of the Arc de Triomphe, there are many triumphal arches all over the world, but this is a relatively new thing and it's actually a replica?
That's what I was told.
Okay.
Yeah. But all this stuff is really new.
Okay. Since the earthquake, at least.
Oh gosh, it's new within probably 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a trip, and to go see it all at night is really fascinating. There was a fountain with all these women and they're breastfeeding, And then you go a little bit further and there's another sculpture and it has more lions on it. And then you go and there's another Asian sculpture. It doesn't make any sense.
And besides the street art and the sculptures and strolling around and seeing that, what sounds like that is going to be part of what we're going to do. Were there other things that you went to culturally, museums or concerts or things like that in the capital?
Well, we did attempt to go to some museums, mm-hmm. but they were closed for renovation.
Okay.
We went to go to the art museum mm-hmm. and different things like that. Now, I think they have a few museums. I think they have a Jewish museum mm-hmm. and they have some other things that might have been open, but I think they're just gearing up for the 2014.
Okay.
I don't know if they're going to have a big presentation or what's going to happen. But what our thing was is that we met locals and ended up doing things with them. I met a local and I was buying jewelry. She was an artist and I was buying jewelry from her. And then it was 10 o'clock at night. And then we got done doing all that. And then she said, well, do you have anything planned? I said, no. So she's like, well, do you want me to take you around and show you? We're like, okay. So then we spent 2 hours with her walking around. And one of the big things that they always talk about is something called Bosa. And so she took us to the oldest place to get Bosa. And the Macedonian people always say, you know, we were ruled by the Ottomans for 500 years. So we have this influence on us. So this is a drink, like a fermented drink.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the Bosa in Turkey and it's nothing like it was in Macedonia. It's a kind of a fermented drink and it kind of looks like chocolate milk and it kind of has a chocolatey flavor essence to it. And it was in a shop with sweets that were more kind of on the Greek and Turkish side that have lots of, everything's kind of in syrup. So we ate something that looked like a Twinkie with ridges in this kind of like sweet syrup and the Bosa. The coolest thing about being in Macedonia was the people.
Well, I get that impression from the number of personal stories you've run into already.
Yeah. One of the other things, they say it's outside of Skopje, but it's really close, is Mount Vodno.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up on the top of the mountain. It's a 75-meter yellow steel cross, and it's illuminated at night.
Mm.
And you can either hike up there. I think from the city center, it takes 3 hours, or you can park and there's a cable car that goes up there
mm-hmm.
and there's picnic tables and places for kids to play. And if you're up there during the daytime, there's great views of Skopje and it's a really cool, like the contrast to being down in Skopje is to go up and see it from above in Mount Vodno.
Okay.
But the other thing that we went to see was Lake Matka, which is about 20 and 30 minutes outside of Skopje. There's hiking and biking and boating and restaurants and churches and monasteries and caves. There's a lot of things to do there. But we went and did a 6-kilometer hike. It was along the edge of the lake mm-hmm. and it's kind of off a cliff. And that was really beautiful and gorgeous and breathtaking. Again, if you're a hiker, if you're an outdoors person, it's a really cool thing to do.
Well, and from the pictures that you sent too, the whole landscape, and especially I think the area you're talking about, looks just very, very rugged. Exposed rock and granite.
Well, yeah, it's very, yeah, there's rock. Yeah, definitely. If I had not been to Albania, I would say, yes, it's rugged.
But, ah, okay.
Yeah, but we spent too much time in Albania and I was like, oh, Macedonia was easy compared to that.
Okay.
But yes, the landscaping, it is rocky. Sometimes hiking, you're stepping over rocks and jutting. But the hike along Lake Matka, there's railings up. It's a very maintained hike.
Okay.
But I wouldn't suggest going very far. Like if you start hiking in and think, this is kind of getting challenging, I would stop because it does get more challenging the further you get in.
Okay, excellent. What surprised you about Macedonia?
Well, nobody knows about it.
Right. Yeah, no, that came across.
We were really surprised that we would go and be the only people there. Another thing was how kind the people were.
Mm-hmm.
And they would bend over backwards. We had rented an apartment from a woman in Skopje, and we spent the majority of our time with her. Hmm. She took us to her parents' house over near Lake Makka, and we went out and did things. And
every place you go, you're making friends. Is this something that always happens to you in your travels, or is this particularly Macedonia?
This is particularly Macedonia.
Okay.
We've been to lots of places, but this is the first place where we've actually come away with friends.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you use a particular guidebook to help plan your travels?
Well, I started off using the Lonely Planet, Western Balkans. Through reading through that, I realized, wow, this is something a little bit more interesting. And so I got the BRAT Macedonia guide.
And then did you find they recommended anything that wasn't really a hit with you? Or did they miss things that you learned about within all the interactions you had with locals?
Well, they make a big deal about is that Skopje is the birthplace of Mother Teresa.
Right.
And there's a Mother Teresa house. And it's beautiful on the outside, but to go in it is just kind of, there's not much there.
Okay. Walk by, take a picture, skip the inside is what it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. And it's free to go in.
Okay.
So it's just, we're just kind of like, really? Okay.
Okay. And then was there anything else that you would put in the next version of either the BRAT or the Lonely Planet guide that you thought they really missed?
One of the things that we were eating, we had a local make for us, is the pie. They call it pie. It's not like pie that we have in the United States. It's like a phyllo dough, and it has something similar to spinach, but it's not a spinach. It's a green leafy vegetable, and there's a white cheese. And if you meet a local and you can make your way into their home and they will make you a pie over the fire, that will be one of the best things you ever eat in your life.
Okay.
It made my eyes cross. It was so good.
You had me at phyllo dough, so.
Yeah. But it was so crazy because our mom was out there and they have to tend the fire. And there's a very special way to do the fire. And you have to know right just at the right moment when to put it on. And then you keep it on there just for a certain amount of time. It's definitely an art to making it. If you can get a pie that's made by a local, it's fantastic.
What do you wish you had known before you went to Macedonia?
I wish I would have known about the whole money situation and having change with us everywhere we went.
That it was more of a cash society, you're saying?
Yeah, except in Skopje, we could... I knew going in that there'd be a lot of times that we couldn't use a credit card. In most places, we had to use cash. But when, in Skopje, we could use credit cards and restaurants and different places. But the thing is about having low denominations and having exact change. Because of socialism, and I was told this by a local. She explained it to me in detail. She says, because of socialism, it still carries over. They don't have that society of like, we've got to make some money and we've got to sell. So we would go into places, and if we didn't have, let's say if something cost $1.50 and we only had $3, they'd just say, oh, too bad, you don't get to buy that. Oh, well. Now, this is in towns, not the capital. Usually the capital, it's a little different. But if you don't have the small change, you just may not get to buy things.
That's unusual.
Or they're always asking, do you have the coins? Do you have the this? They don't want to make change.
Interesting. You're standing in the prettiest place that you saw in all of Macedonia. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I'm at the shoreline of Lake Ohrid, and I'm looking across the water, and there's some boats, and I can see the mountains in the background, and the water is just crystal clear, and I can see the fish swimming around.
Excellent. We didn't talk so much about money except for the them not wanting to take your money. How expensive is Macedonia from a tourism point of view?
It is crazy cheap.
Okay.
You were staying in hotels that probably would cost $300 a night in the United States. And they were like $40, $50. We didn't spend more than $50 a night for a hotel. And it would always include some gourmet breakfast.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Before I get to my last three questions, what else should people know before they go to Macedonia?
Well, it's important to know that when you enter Macedonia, you have between 24 and 48 hours, depending on who you speak to be registered with the police.
Okay.
And if you're staying at a hotel, they'll usually take your passport and they will register for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're staying with friends, you've got to make sure you get registered. But it's important to be registered with the police and have that piece of paper. So if for some reason you would be stopped and asked for your papers, you don't get deported.
Okay.
It's highly unlikely that that would happen, but it's definitely important. So if you're moving around and going to different hotels, they're going to ask for your passport and they're going to register you with the police.
Mm-hmm. That's actually not as uncommon. I mean, we've run into that in a number of different places, but of course we're usually staying in hotels, so it's not an issue, but it's a little surprising to us coming from the U.S. though. Anything else that we should know before we go to Macedonia?
There's a definite divide in the service and the people.
Okay.
So, like I said, the people were so friendly and I love them. But if they're in a service situation where they're in a restaurant working or in a hotel, it may not come off as being super nice,
mm-hmm.
because they have, like I said, the carryover from socialism. It's like they have a job, they're getting paid for it regardless if they're nice to you or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may sit down in a restaurant. This may not happen in Skopje, but in outside of Skopje, you may go sit down in a restaurant and the waiter may come up to your table and just look at you and you have to say, "Can I have a menu, please?" And then they'll go get the menu.
Okay.
So it's a really kind of a weird thing. So please don't be put off by what might come off as being rude. That's just kind of a carryover from socialism.
Okay.
The people are really nice, but they just may kind of go, "Well, what do you want? Why are you in a restaurant?" "Well, I'm hungry and I'd like to eat. May I please have a menu?"
Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Macedonia.
Going into store that I think I'm only going to be in there for 5 to 10 minutes and end up spending 5 hours with a family. And that happened more than once.
I could see that that would be the correct answer to that question. And you really know you're in Macedonia when what?
You attempt to buy something and if you don't have correct change, it's like, oh, well, you guess you don't get to buy it.
And if you had to summarize Macedonia in 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Undiscovered.
Okay.
Hospitable,
mm-hmm.
and onion.
Okay, in terms of complicated or...
The thing is you keep peeling off layers and there's more and more and more. That's what we found as we were there. Oh, we could spend a week just in this town. We could spend so much more time. There was just more things to be discovered.
Excellent. Kelsey, where can people read more about your travels?
It's at cinetraveler.com.
And Cinetraveler, so... travel having to do with movies a lot.
Yes.
Were there movies filmed in Macedonia?
Not to my knowledge that are outside, but there are famous Macedonian filmmakers.
But this was not a cine travel pilgrimage here.
No, but we just did discuss how it would be a great place to film things.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming on The Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your newfound love of Macedonia.
Thank you.
I heard from Peter about the episode that we did on the Leeward Islands of the Lesser Antilles. When I listened to Radio Netherlands on shortwave way back in the 1980s, what is the highest peak was an example used as the type of trivia question listeners would send into the mailbag program just so they could send in something more than a signal report. The Netherlands has never been known for its high altitude peaks. I had heard that the highest peak in the Netherlands, the European part, was where the Dutch, Belgium, and German borders meet. According to CIA's World Factbook, that is Valserberg with an altitude of 322 meters. About Wisconsin and fish fries, there's a PBS documentary about fish fries in Milwaukee. This led the filmmaker to a film and a book about another Wisconsin dinner tradition, the Supper Club. And I'll include the links that Peter sent for both of those. In response to the recent Amateur Traveler newsletter about how I was leaving my job and was going to be doing more travel, I heard from Sandra, who said, "I wonder how many people want to do what you did, quit the job and work independently in any country, any time of the year. Of course, that may take guts and maybe a little bit of planning, making your own luck, and having destiny on your side. I think it would be great to see the world less as a tourist and more like a short-term resident. I do wish you the best of luck." And I should clarify that I won't be doing quite that much traveling, although it looks like the next couple months are going to be pretty darn busy with traveling, because my wife still does have her day job and plans to work there until she retires. I love to travel too. Just got back from Cuba. I do love my job, but I wish I could convey to you how much I miss the beach
and being able to snorkel every day at some beautiful coral reef. It's just not possible to pack it up and take it home here in Montreal, Canada. Heavy sigh. And Sandra, thanks so much. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. Check out that video about the camel races in Virginia City. I think you will find it amusing. If you have any questions about Amateur Traveler, you can send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X or join the Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And as always, thanks so much for listening.